Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. I am speaking to you from our studio live here in Washington, D.C. My name is Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greetings and assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Bilal.
Alaikum salam, Brother Aziz. How are you this evening?
Great, great. Doing well, my brother. Looking forward to the show tonight with the beautiful program that we have on tonight, you know, the natural disasters and freedom without justice, I see.
Yes, I thought it was very well, you and I both thought it was a very appropriate title. Again, of course, our title this evening is Natural Disasters and Freedom Without Justice. So, of course, we're going to have our expert to come on and speak to us about natural disasters. And brothers and sisters, and so we're so fortunate to have Sister Aisha, because she's worked with FEMA and she's been with FEMA. She knows FEMA inside and out, and she's trying to teach the FEMA programs so that all of and our emphasis is always African Americans and African American communities, but we know natural disasters is something that's going to happen to all of us. There's nothing to, but so when you see a storm reported, they tell you that we're having a major storm, and more than 50 million are in the path of the storm. So when you start talking about a storm and more than 50 million is in the path of that storm, you can see how big natural disasters are, and we can see what the results of these natural disasters. They're worse than we've ever seen before in our lifetime. Entire communities. The most recent one was the one, Brother Aziz, we know that was in Perry. Was it Perry? Is there a Perry town or something like that, Texas? Took out the entire town. The
disaster.
Yeah. So you can see what these disasters are measuring up to. So to have an expert in our community to tell us about the preparations for the disaster, and then the premeditate and how we can and what we can do to overcome a disaster. So she will be on with us later. And she'll be informing us, but most of all, she has a training program as to where if you learn and pass her training program, you yourself can become a FEMA is looking for, I would say, millions of personnel that can do paperwork for the relief after a disaster. And that's the biggest problem that's going on now with these huge storms coming through, 50 million in its path, and we don't even have a million trained representatives throughout the country that can do the paperwork that FEMA requires to get a recovery from these disasters. So She's continuing her training program, and brothers and sisters that program and learn how to be a FEMA representative as to where you can represent the regions that these disasters cover. So natural disasters, and of course, our second, the program that we're going to be starting off talking about, you and I, Brother Aziz, is freedom without justice. And of course, we just went through Juneteenth, and we've been in this country now for over 500 years, and as far as the Approximation Emancipation Bill that was signed over 100 years ago, 1865, but we know there were some, it was as early as 1863, but since the popular 1865, we'll go along with that date. But regardless as to what date we go along with, we've known they give us freedom, but there's no justice with the freedom. So
that's true.
And, I know for a fact that we're realizing for a fact as African Americans to have freedom without justice is no more than a continuation of slavery. For instance, when we were so-called said we have freedom and now you can leave your slave masters' plantations or wherever they had you work in the black soil, you could they're telling you you have freedom, but how can you have freedom and realize any freedom if you are someone saying after having you in slavery for about 300 years and now you made this country the most wealthiest country in the entire world, but when they say that you have freedom, there is no economics that comes with that freedom. How in the world can a slave be free, or how can anyone be free without economics and means of survival? So again, when you look at our situation, our means of survival is just that. It's another disaster. It's a continued disaster. As a matter of fact, as far as I am concerned, and I know many shares this concern, is that we as African Americans, who is more prepared for a disaster than African Americans? We've been living a disaster ever since they tied us up and bought us into the slave ships and the horrible, inhumane situations. Our entire history is African Americans hasn't been anything but a disaster. And so again, it's just a continuation of disasters. So so when it comes to, again, disasters, who is more prepared to live through a disaster than African Americans? So Brother Aziz, that's my little 10 minutes opening remarks. I am going to now turn it over to my co-host, and he'll give you his opening remarks. then we will start opening up our channels to our listeners and those of you who wish to share in and give your remarks about freedom and no justice comes with it. So, Brother Aziz.
Thank you, Brother Bilal. I was going to say one of the things I wanted to say, briefly touching later on when Sister Aisha Abdul-Ali comes on, a professional that knows about the preparation for disasters, whether, you know, there'll be for the climate change that's coming about or natural disasters that take place. One of the things I was going to say, Brother Bilal, you mentioned about this tornado that tore that town up out there in Texas. Well, there was also a chicken factory not too far from there, chicken farm. It devastated the chicken farm. That same area where the chickens were in the pen, even though the pen was missing in that, hundreds of chickens were there, still left, gathered together, alive, untouched. It's like, how in the world did they survive all of that? In the very facility that they were in that was demolished, blown away. And it shows all these chickens. It's on the Internet. It shows all these chickens that are, it's on the Weather Channel app. It shows all these chickens in these big, and you from, you know, the Delmarva Peninsula, Brother Bilal, you know how those chicken houses are, how long they are and that.
Yeah.
And it shows like three of them that are close together, and all these hundreds of chickens that are there,
thousands of them all huddled
together.
That's right.
And it's like, man. Talking about a disaster. Whoever owns that farm, I don't know how they're going to be able to get them all together. Because once the chickens realize that everything is over with and they start moving about freely, they're going to be all over the countryside, you know. And that, but that's just one of the things about these natural disasters, that these weather changes when they come in and that. But what I wanted to say, the, you know, concerning the you know, no justice, no peace, you know, it's like one of the things our community, the African-American community, one of the things that would help our youth when they're young realizing that there is unlimited opportunities in America if we make them and economically, but what they have to realize is that their ability to be able to think and be able to become these wealthy people, not based on just going and striving for wealth, but opportunities where you can educate and make changes in the world. And my point is, our youth should know things about African Americans and the inventions that African Americans have made that have made America a great country. We're talking about in all avenues, from food, shelter, and clothing, you know, the dress, the way we dress, the way we drive cars, our stoplights, our stop signs, blood plasma, the invention of the automobile engines and that, you know, the making the automobile, everything. Inventing the light bulb, where we, the light bulbs that we use today, the telegraph systems, it just goes on and on. But our youth are not taught about these things and about these African-American brothers and sisters, how what they did was vital and important for the life of America. Not only the life of America, but the survival of America. These are facts about African Americans who overcame all of the prejudices, and systematic obstacles that were put to prevent them, as you say, Brother Bilal, from getting the economic wealth that we need to be successful in society. Automatically, as we've talked about many times, the redlining. The redlining, it's a big type of a concept. Redlining is just not a concept limited to real estate, banking, all types of mechanisms that set up with the redlining to stop us from making economic progress. But in the fact of that being those mechanisms being set up, if our children from day one are not just taught about American history, it's taught by the Europeans, but taught American history concerning African Americans and the part we played in American history. From slavery to fighting for, as they say, fighting for survival, fighting upon arrival, and that's what we've been doing. And in that fighting for survival, our ingenuity, this is what the slave masters have always known, that if we were given the same opportunities as them, we would excel above them, i.e. the fact of it was, while one part of the world was living in caves and eating raw meat and that, another part of the world, people were over there dressed in garments, making, living, taking baths, cleaning themselves up every day, and having inventions, medicine, and already you've been using what's known as the wheel to get around in and all these types of things, and one other part of the world existed and not over there. So our children have to know from day one that, that's another history. Here's a history about yourselves and what we have done in America since we've been here, in spite of the obstacles that are deliberately put in front of us. They got to know that we, and that's men and women, most recently, the honors that were given to the sisters that sit down and were given credit for working out the mathematical computations and that to bring the astronauts back down to Earth from being out there in outer space, because they hadn't figured out how to do that yet. And so here we go, maybe 50 years later or better, you give somebody credit, but you give all these guys all the credit for going up there and doing this and that, but you don't tell how they got up there, and then the people couldn't figure out how we're going to get them back. That it took these ladies sitting in a room by themselves in that, because they had to encounter racism in that too, because they didn't think they were smart enough to do these types of things. And the women solved it. So they kept that low profile and undercover, but, the fact was known for all these years. And then finally, when a movie is being made about one living soul survivor is able to, this one sister was able to come up and get a citizenship award and things like that. And, we're sick and tired of that type of activity being done. Like some of the greatest parts of the African-American community is not known. And one of the things during Black History Month, we've discussed this before, even on our program, during Black History Month, some of the greatest events that took place in African-American history during modern times from the 1930s to today, especially in the Black community, was the Nation of Islam under Elijah Muhammad and that Muslim community and all that they did to awaken and give the African-Americans some backbone to stand up against the white man. No one would stand up against the white man back in those days because it was treacherous. It was almost like open, and it was the law that you could kill a black man if you said you felt threatened or whatever, and no court in the United States would go against that. That was a law in the land that people don't want to admit. But at the same time, back during those same times, we had economics in our community. And it's said that the biggest one eventually was out there in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But we know we had economics all in our community, in the Harlem and that. But I know in the southern states, further down south, in Wilmington, North Carolina, Charlotte, Savannah, Georgia, Alabama, Mobile. Matter of fact, the little town that I came from in Fairhope, Alabama, we had a little store that my godmother ran. A little convenience store, they would call them today, but it wasn't no big thing where they had different meats in their bolognese and cold cuts like that. And the little small items that they knew that we used daily. But other than that, living out in the country, you know, you had your own eggs, chickens, and stuff like that. You didn't need to go to the store to buy that kind of stuff. But, you know, we say sugar and flour. Those are some of the main things we bought back in those days. But because of the time we had, the money did circulate in our community. It did circulate in our community, wherein today it doesn't circulate really at all. And if it does, you know, we've been told it only circulates a couple hours. And that's long enough to put it in our pocket, get it out of the ATM, or go cash that check, and then go give it away. Go give it all away and have nothing. But if our children was taught from Jump Street, and this is what I'm saying, that they would help with the economics in our community business, would help with them wanting to go in business to do things, is to learn the history about different African-American men and women, again, that help maintain the life of America, what they invented and came up with, what kept America and keep America to alive today. We're talking about in all aspects of American life, medicine, which was important, communications, which is the number one. Communications is the number one thing that keeps America together. There was no communications. There could be no transportation, whether it be on the land or the air or the sea. There could be no medicine or telecommunications or anything like that. No business if it wasn't communication. That's the number one. And we've contributed to that immensely. If one was to go all of us telegraph communication, this is out of space, satellite, that African-Americans to put things together and even make it even more African, primarily, in the form of religion. The Catholic religion, in which all of the other parts of Christianity stem from, within the Catholic religion itself, there were already three black popes. But as they say, not up under the Roman Catholic Church that they would have today, but there were three different black popes that existed, and all of them did something major in the Catholic religion that is practiced today by all Catholics. So it has been known that from times ago, even the knights, there were black knights in Europe. You just don't know these histories and then until it was brought out, and then it's, oh, yeah, you know. But it's like, why would they want to tell you about something to make you look good when we're dealing with Western history? We're dealing with a country. Why would you be living in China and they start teaching you black history? You're going to learn about Chinese history. So it is important that all children learn from the beginning, like, hey, man, just because you're over here and you see these people have done everything, this is why it's looking like this to you. This is why things are like it is. So they can have a perspective of who they are, where they are, and what they need to do to progress economically. That's just for the children. But with our program that have, the way we have it that exists today is, you know, we are constantly trying to get our community members to participate in a program of marketing and networking different businesses, you have business ideas, you want somebody to join, you'll find out how to do that. This is what our program has been about for a number of years. And Brother Bilal is the main host of the program. And passionate about keeping this form. Sometimes I've been disappointed in sometimes the lack of open communication on our blog. We do see a number of times.
We're losing. You may listen to your mic.
They don't participate. And, you know, it makes, you know, I would like to be more open participation in whatever you have to say about business. Whatever business you want to get into, you want to inquire about a business, you want to maybe know something legal about business, financial about business. We have members that are part of our program and our staff that will allow people to learn these things. Also, we have a web page that we have other businesses on there that offer you their service. All different types of things.
Brother
been awesome for 8 years in that. It's been there to help the African-American community move forward in economics and not sit back and watch other communities move forward and always talk about them moving forward. The reason why they move forward is because of a business unity, a unity among themselves. And this is what our program is about, what it's about. Business, marketing, and networking. This is what we're talking about. Other African-Americans can help other African-Americans, as well as those who are individual listeners to our program that are not in business. You may learn some things about business that not only will help you to understand how businesses are run, but also businesses that may be able to service some of the needs that you have in your regular daily life. And this is what we're trying to attract, people that from A to Z, from people that repair appliances, people that, you know, auto repair, and on with, you know, plumbers, you know, attorneys. You know. This is what the Black Belt, you know, New Africa Business District in Washington, D.C. is in terms of attract and promote and market. And one of the very little things and least things that we've asked people to do is support us. But being a member of New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association, which is not a big fee in that, is very helpful to keep us ongoing, our programming ongoing, especially our second portion of the program, preparing you for natural disasters that come along. Think of, but natural disasters that you wouldn't be thinking of. When it gets too hot, like it's getting ready to get in Texas and not in that area, and other places out in the Southwest now, it's getting ready to get hot. Wherein you can go out and crack an egg and fry it on any car out there, and it don't have to be a mail car; it could be one of these fiberglass. But that's the kind of heat that's going to be out there. So people that don't have air conditioning and things like that, there's got to be some preparation made where these people can be taken to a facility or somewhere where they don't die from heat exhaustion or heat suffocation, you know. And these things take place, not just rain, not just flooding, not just tornadoes, not just hurricanes. It's a number of disasters that could take place. And on the second portion of our show, the expert that we have on this FEMA and working with FEMA, and she has a program that tells her, I will say it again, that she is offering specifically all communities, but she is more and more concerned about getting that word out to the African American community
stated, that we don't get the help we need until way after the fact. And in the process of way after the fact, we have a lot of casualties in our community. We don't have to have that. We don't have to have that if we prepare ourselves. The preparation is one of the major steps in being able to overcome a disaster and survive a disaster and be prepared to rebuild after the disaster. So we have a lot to offer on our New Africa Business Association, Washington, D.C. Blog Talk Radio program. We have a lot to offer you every week. So those that are listening to us in the USA and outside the USA, again, we welcome you to the show. And you can participate with us any kind of way you like, vocally while we're talking now or on the Internet. Send us some messages. Let us know how you're enjoying the program. And if you would like to hear subjects that we may not have brought up or have talked about, brought up again, or if you're seeking some advice about different businesses and aspects of going into business, we'd be more than glad to help you in any kind of way we can. So, you know, starting out tonight, Brother Bilal, that's kind of what I wanted to start out as, because we know no justice, no peace. So there's a lot to be said there. Too much to be said. There's perhaps our show tonight, you know, Freedom Without Justice, you know, we'll talk about that. It's, you know, the freedoms are not the kind of freedoms that we think it is. You can't have freedom if you don't have economic power. You have no freedom. You are a subject, not a free person. So with that said, Brother Bilal, my little 10 minutes, or a little bit more maybe, but that's what I have to start out with tonight, brother.
Brother Aziz, we certainly appreciate your comments. I'm trying to open up our mics here, but can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. Like I said, we're trying to open up our mics here, but our radio station seems to be acting up on us. But I am going to see if we, matter of fact, I lost my entire switchboard is gone totally dead on us. But hopefully we see if we still have our guest. So, Sister Aisha, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Salaam alaikum. Okay. Good evening.
Salaam. Aisha, our title this evening is Natural Disasters and Freedom Without Justice, and of course, freedom without justice is no more than a continuation of slavery, because if you don't have justice to go along with freedom, and of course, that's the situation we as African Americans have had ever since the so-called emancipation given to us. But it was given to us without any kind of justice. As a matter of fact, I won't go into a lot of the old history, but I will just say that freedom without justice is just another continuation of African Americans and the disaster that we've been living with our entire existence here in the United States. So again, I am going to bring on, and I am just going to open our channels up this evening where all of our directors will just speak at liberty. And, of course, those of you who are listening and you have something that you like to interject, we certainly welcome your comments. But the average storm that comes through, and we just had a storm that just came through. As a matter of fact, the storm is still out there, and they're telling us that in its path, there are more than 50 million Americans in the path of this storm. So 50 million in the path of a storm, how many of us are trained to prepare for a disaster, and how many of us are trained for relief after the disaster? And with that question being asked, I am going to now shift it over to our expert, and an expert that we should be very, very glad we have, because they're not. Matter of fact, I don't know anyone who is an expert in disaster like Sister Aisha. So, Sister Aisha, without further ado, I am turning this over to you. Your comment.
Thank you very much, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, and to our audience tonight. Yeah. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
Can you hear?
Well.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, all this week I have been inundated, and I'm sure the audience has too, concerning the storms that are coming into the different environments and to the different regions throughout the United States and outside of the U.S. We mentioned many months ago, several months ago, when you hear of a storm in another country, let's say in West Africa, for instance, or on the African continent, the consequences of that storm can affect our lives. Storms have consequences. You can feel the consequences of one storm over 2 miles away. So if it happens in Africa or Nicaragua, in other parts of the country, or in California with the fires, expect to feel some of the consequences in your area if the travel distance is at least 2,000 miles from where the storm occurred. Case in point, we have a lot of wildfires occurring in Canada. Eventually, wildfires, remember we said, causes drought. You know what happens when the earth, the ground heats up, it cracks, and the water supply becomes limited. And even after the water supply is limited with droughts, we have earthquakes because base earth breaks up. And, of course, the mulch from underneath comes up. And so we are not in this alone. If you're in the U.S., please do not think that what happens in other countries are not going to have consequences for us in this country. We are also feeling not just the environmental impact, we are feeling a devastating economic impact. The competition, the whole issue of climate change has increased competition for scarce resources. It causes more economic inequality. And critical, essential resources such as food, water, land for growing crops, and forests are becoming very scarce. The cost of these items that we depend on every day, and I know when you all go to the grocery store, you see the prices increase, because when I go to the grocery store, prices are increasing continuously.
Yeah.
there's going to become a time where even those of us who consider ourselves having available resources, financial resources, to purchase our goods, that time is going to become very scarce. And we might not, we're going to have to change our diet, and hopefully for a better diet. We're going to have to start eating less. We're going to have to start buying less. The stores are already feeling the pinch because shoppers, the numbers of shoppers walking into the stores are becoming fewer and fewer. They're having to reduce their prices. And so you see this big influx of stores that are closing down for many reasons. Now, we know that a lot of that is intentional because the Pluto types, the people who are invested in many of these stores, they want to move in a different arena. So some of that is boardroom decision. But it's impacting our lives. When the grocery stores are leaving the communities that we're in, when the pharmacies are leaving. So all of these issues, they are not all caused by climate change, but we must understand climate change is a major factor in our lives. So we would like, I don't know how our audience is at this time, Brother Bilal, but we would certainly like for the audience to ask the questions that are perplexing to you, that are concerning to you as it relates to economics, because these, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, they're the ex in economics. My understanding of economics as it relates to climate change is quite sufficient, but they are the experts in economics. Ask the question. Let us have this discussion, because after the end of the day, we want you to go back to your community, talk to your organization chairs, your community chairs, your faith-based group. Ask them to bring us on board to train communities in preparedness. If you are not prepared for climate change disaster, you have no resilience. Resilience simply means ability to bounce back after the disaster. You have no resilience. If you have no resilience, you are headed for destruction. That destruction is going to impact your economics because it's going to impact your health, the well-being of your family, and it could very well impact the lives of your family members. So if a hazard, and when that hazard occurs in your community, and believe me, it will, if you don't know what you're going to do before it occurs, you have put yourself in a very vulnerable situation. And I know I have people telling me, well, I don't want to hear about climate and preparedness because it's just too overwhelming and it's too much to think about. Well, in my response to them is very simply, you have no other choice, or you do have a choice. You can either prepare yourself now or you can be the victim of your own ignorance, your own resistance, and your own denial. And whatever decision you make, it could affect your children and your entire household. So we say to people, all of us have fears, but you got to overcome those fears and do the best thing for your family. We buy homeowners insurance because if the house caught on fire, and God forbid, we want a replacement. Well, this is a kind of insurance. Get prepared before the storm. The system that is set up with Black Street, Wall Street, Black Belt Wall Street, we can come into your home via Zoom, or in some places we can do in person and train
neighborhoods, hundreds of people at a time on preparedness. In addition, we can provide you with access to the resources, the supplies you need to evacuate or shelter in place. Every family needs an emergency kit, or go bag as we call, that has food, dehydrated food pouches, pouches of water, medical supplies, and some of the other tools that you need depending on the area of the country you live in. Have it sitting next to the door or in the closet as you walk out the door. So when you get that signal, emergency alert signal to evacuate, and we talk to you about that in the training, what the signals are, what they mean. But when you hear those signals to evacuate, you and your family, you can just go out the door, pick up your emergency kit and walk out the door and get in your car and leave. You don't have time to go to the grocery store and think about it. 3 days in advance of a warning, you do not have time to go to the grocery stores. Everyone is at the grocery stores, and it's chaotic. And the tracking system says that every year during the storm season in different parts of the country, the chaos in the grocery stores become greater and more hazardous. So can you imagine at some point when the shelves are already bare because of the inventory issues that we're having, food supply issues we're having, it's going to become even more chaotic? You must, and I implore you, you must get prepared, because that storm is coming. We are not able to stop it. The scientists are scrambling, trying to stop it. But our country is still emitting so much CO2 that we can't get a hold of this situation. So our audience, ask the question of how can you get prepared where you are. We can do it. And it's incumbent upon those of us who are in this field to help you get prepared. And this is what we want to do. Preparedness can mitigate the impact of those storms. Mitigation simply means lessen the impact of the storms on you, because you're going to know where you're going. You're going to have all of your documentations that are essential with you, because we're going to tell you what they are. You're going to have a place to go if the storm is coming from the west to the east. You're not going to go to New York. If you have relatives in New York, you're not going there. You're going to know where to go. You're going to go west, and you'll probably go southwest. So all of these things you really have to consider before the storm. So if we have any questions, any comments from the audience tonight, let's talk about this thing.
Brothers, our mics are open. We are having a small problem with our studio, but many of you, I did log in. So if you can hear us, we can certainly hear you. Our mics are open. Any comments? We welcome your comments. Our mics are open. Again, brothers and sisters, this evening we're talking about natural disasters, but we're also talking about justice, freedom without justice. And of course, we know we just went through Juneteenth, but we know that we supposed to have been freed over 100 years ago, 1865 or so. But today, our freedom situation is just as bad as it was in 1865 and beyond. And that is because if you're going to make a person a slave and have them enslaved for over 300 or 400 years, and all of a sudden you're going to write an amendment, you write a law, legislative law, saying that the slave is free. But the slave is free, and you never put in the economics to the freedom of that slave, even though that slave has made you, and I'm saying you, I'm talking about the United States and the white peoples of that enslaved us, have made the United States white peoples the richest peoples in the entire world. So if that slave have made you so wealthy, and all of a sudden legislate a law saying that the slaves are free, but there was no economics applied with that law, how in the world can that so-called freedom, the freedom of African-American slaves, how in the world can this person, or these peoples ever realize freedom, and they have no values to live on, or no values to live with. And that particular, and from whether you go back 300 or 400 years, or whether you go back to the emancipation on up to today, African Americans still have not realized, haven't been given their share of the values that they have bought to this country. And again, if I produce the values, and which African Americans did, you produced them because you worked the black soil. You worked the fields. The fields is what made this country, and the fields is what makes any country wealthy. And so we have made, and like I said, we've made the United States the most wealthiest country in the entire world, but been given a freedom by these same slave owners, but no values whatsoever to go along with this so-called freedom. So the question is, how can you have freedom and there's no value, and of course no justice, because anytime you have a any kind of living being, I don't care whether it's a human being or you're talking about an animal, when there's hunger, there's going to be chaos, because when there is food or any type of whatever your surviving needs are, you're going to find most animals or human beings fighting each other over the scraps of whatever little food or whatever they can find to survive off of, they're going to be fighting whoever, and most of the time fighting each other. Saying that to say, when you see the violence that's going on in our communities, and you see that these violence have been going on ever since this all emancipation on up to today, but how can it not be violence and unlawful behavior when you have employed that on a people as to where, again, they've been given freedom, but there is no justice whatsoever to go along with the freedom. So, again, that's what our show is about this evening. We just went through a celebration. And I'll be honest with you, brothers and sisters, I can appreciate their I would say something symbolic, saying that I'm free, but I can't realize freedom. I can't realize freedom when I realize that I've given so much wealth and I've produced so much wealth to the existence of my homeland, which is America, just like it's the white America. But I've produced so much. And then when it comes to the distribution of that wealth, me as a black person, when I say me as a black person, I'm talking about all black peoples. We haven't been given nothing. There is no appropriation of anything. So, again, we as African-Americans, when it comes to a disaster, we've been living a disaster ever since we've been here. So, again, not that we want to say that we know how to live a disaster better than the next person, because nobody wants to be in a disaster. But our disaster has been forced on us. Why? Because fairness and justice has never been given to us. So again, I wonder about this freedom when the justice, and the justice is the fairness. The justice is giving back to the communities that have made our country a very successful country. So, like I said, sharing in a celebration. And I watched the much of the celebrations, and I watched our jumping up, singing and dancing, and the things that we normally do. But I'm wondering how can that be such a big celebration when there's never been restitution paid back to me of what I am due. And especially when you see, and they just appropriated more than another $1 billion to Ukraine and legislated today or yesterday, they're saying they're getting ready to send them another $1 point some odd billion in addition. See, all of the other billions of dollars that they have sent to Ukraine, all the other billions of dollars they sent to Israel and other European countries, you don't see none of it going to Africa. You don't see any of it going to any kind of dark or brown-skinned people's country. So again, freedom without justice. Brothers and sisters, our mics are open. That's our discussion this evening. We have to discuss this, because by discussing this, we form a solution. And that solution is getting what is due to us. But we can't get what is due to us as long as we're acting like we're satisfied with nothing. And that's what I saw in the celebration. I'm sorry to say, brothers and sisters, I'm speaking my own personal now. I ain't got nothing to do with the freedom. If it's and the holidays, and if everybody's satisfied. But I'm sorry, I'm not satisfied with nothing. So again, I don't feel so free when I am due a portion of the wealth that I helped, that I, and when I say I'm talking about African Americans, all of us, that we created. So again, brothers and sisters, our mics are open, and we welcome your comments. Our mics are open.
Thank you, Brother Bilal. And I have to reiterate, our wealth situation in America has decreased, and we would like to hear from the audience, what do you think, and where we are going in this country as far as economics? Do we have a plan to move forward? There are many ethnic groups coming into this country, and many of them are coming with a plan, and they work together. Are we working together as a people? You know, has that been stripped from us? And one of the very best examples of us working together is what I recently came across. And I said this last week, in the first 50 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, so that would put us around 1913, in around there. Black, in the first 50 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, Black Americans had accumulated a personal wealth of over $700 million. The literacy rate climbed from 5% to 70%. This was in the first 50 years. After supposedly receiving our freedom. And we know that we were not free even after the Emancipation Proclamation, but we worked hard as a people. We started building and maintaining generational wealth for the Black families, and that wasn't easy. Even in 2023, our generational wealth has declined tremendously. There are so many regulations put in place that has hampered our economic development. So Black families in February of 2023 had a median net worth of $24,100 compared to a median net worth for white families of $188,200. Our greatest asset is our home. But do you know that if we are not prepared correctly, we can lose that very easily through a natural disaster? Homeowners insurance does not cover damage caused by floods or earthquakes. You need separate policies for these hazards. your car is not covered by any other auto insurance other than comprehensive liability and the liability insurance, you are not covered. You have to have comprehensive coverage, which is expensive. Homeowners insurance is expensive. But those are the two other policies that will help you to maintain the generational wealth in your home that you have accumulated in your home, and that's where most of our wealth is. And that's the wealth that we intend to pass down to the next generation. We have to get flood insurance. And we have to start looking at our policies. We have many obstacles standing in our way. But unless we become knowledgeable of our situation, you know, we're truly going to continue to our situation is going to continue to decline economically, physically, socially, as well as we are the ones that are constantly increasing the homeless, causing the increase to the homeless population. These are things that we as a people, we must become aware of. And we have to do something about them. We can't depend on other people to take care of us. We have to do it ourselves. And we have never historically been a people who depended on others to take care of us because we knew that was not going to happen. And we had to work together. We worked together as communities. You cannot survive a storm by yourself. You need other people. You need your community. You need someone that can help you reach out. So the neighbors have got to come together. And we're going to have to do something about this homeless population. The African Americans, although we only represent between 13 or 14% of the general population, we represent 40% of people experiencing homeless. And more than 50% of homeless families with children. This imbalance is getting worse. And when I look in my community, and we live in all these communities that are historical communities built by our ancestors when we had Black Wall Street in different parts, Tulsa, Atlanta, Durham, in different parts of the country when we had those establishments in place. We looked now, we used to have segregated hospitals. Everything was segregated, our entire communities. Now we have homeless who look like zombies in the community, and they have no place to go. They have hardly no resources. And this is what we're dealing with now. And the institutions, the churches, the mosques, the synagogues, we're not doing enough to educate the people. So I implore our audience, ask the tough questions. When you ask the tough questions, we know next week how to come back and answer that question. If we can't answer that question tonight, we'll have an answer for you. So we welcome your comments, your suggestions, because you know what you need. So please let us hear from you.
Brothers and sisters, our mics are open. We welcome your comments. Our mics are open.
You know, Brother Aziz here, thank you. One of the things I wanted to say was when it comes to the freedoms in this country and the justice in this country, one of the things I believe, since the time our people were brought over here as slaves, that our community has always been terrorized, and terrorized to the point to where that type of terrorizing that's been put upon our community has brought about a certain kind of mindset in the people. And it goes so far as destroying community life to the point to wherein it makes it difficult to get that mentality back, that mindset back, to want to unify and have the community business life that's been about before. Because as we can see, all of the community, African-American communities that established themselves back from the early 1800s on up to the day, has especially from the 1800s to the early 1900s, have been terrorized to the point to where, you know, they've been attacked, businesses destroyed, and many lost their lives in that. And, you know, they had to run and flee. And, of course, during segregation, you know, this, especially in a lot of the southern places, I'm personally from Alabama, and we had, you know, like I say, my godmother had a little convenience store in the community, just things that was, you know, things that we needed, not, you know, and so, and that, you know, we that's because we had to do business with one another. People didn't want to go downtown or whatever, because if they was down there, they went down to take care of business and get on out of there, because white folks, you know, if you did anything wrong, you might get attacked, as well as people were just afraid. So I believe that our community has been terrorized to the point to where it has had some effect on our business life and our communities, and going into business, feeling that the government or will come at them for whatever reasons or whatever. And so, you know, information that we get from our participants and our directors, such as Sister Aisha and your brother Bilal, is what help our folks understand that there's nothing to be afraid of, that it's just an absolute part of living here in America that you have business life in your communities, and that business life be from people that are like you, that look like you. And that's what our program, a blog talk show, provides for the community, the opportunity not to be afraid to come forward and voice what it is, as Sister said, that you would like to know about going into business, or what you would like to know about in preparing for the unforeseen disasters that are going to happen. It's just that, you know, you don't see them right upon you. You don't believe it's going to happen, but they are going to happen, as we see them happen every day. And one of the points that has been made through our program on concerning disaster preparation is one of the important things that Sister Aisha put out there, that people, even though they think that the government, they can rely on the government, the government has put an outstanding notice out there that minimum of 3 days it'll take before they can get to you to help you. It may take longer. So if you got a shortage of supplies or whatever that you need to survive with, and you don't have enough to last at least 3 days or more, then that could cause a lot of problems for you, a lot of problems. So it's very important to know what to do ahead of time and be prepared ahead of time and have in storage already there waiting. So if you if you're called upon to make that move, you're prepared with everything you need. Or if you have to stay at home, you have everything that you need at home to prepare yourself with. So don't be afraid to participate and voice, let us hear your voice here. And if not, let us know over the internet at our website. And we'll be more than glad to help you in any kind of way we can. But I just want to put that out there about the terrorism. You know, the United States always talk about these terrorists from over in the Mideast and all that, or the people that's going around shooting up different places now because the madness has gotten worse in this country as well as a lot of other places. But the most terrorism that's been in the United States has been African Americans being terrorized constantly. That is why there was a organization formed called Black Lives Matter. That's just one of the organizations that was formed because of black African-American people being terrorized. So I just wanted to put that out there for our people that's listening. And so we're here for you in case you want to know anything about getting into business, as well as preparing for the upcoming disaster that's coming up. And that includes, it's a disaster when you lose your job and you need to know what to do. How can I be prepared in case I lose my job? What should I be able to do? So please let us know if you have any questions concerning any of those matters. And back to you, Brother Bilal and Sister Aisha.
Brothers and sisters, our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
We have some. We got somebody said something. Well, thanks, Shalom.
Go right ahead. Our mics are open. We welcome your comments. Go right ahead.
Well,
I'm Shalom.
Yeah, brother. Excellent program. Excellent program. I was going to comment on those chickens that survived that storm. And it seems like survived because they stuck together, right?
Yes.
They stuck together and they survived the storm. That's a metaphor. But it doesn't take a lot of them. All it takes is a small group. Our problem is, I think that we bought into that idea of the masses of the people. You can't have a mass of the people because how can you make a decision with 10,000? You got to have two or three people. Muhammad the Prophet started off with him and a couple of friends. We call them companions, so it's Sahaba. They were just his buddies, but they got these fancy names. But everything starts with you and a couple of people that can make a decision. And it seems to me that if a couple of us get together, like the fact that we're building this club building in Southeast will give us a building, or if we have a road, like in my neighborhood, the Chinese have a road. They have two or three buildings. You go to one building, you got a complaint, you got to run through his brother. He owns another building. Everybody owns another building. We have two or three buildings together, and we can start a road, and our money can circulate in that little road. And then from there, we can keep our money. I don't have much to say, but that's my comment.
We definitely appreciate your comments. Brothers and sisters, our mics are still open.
Yes.
Anyone who have comments, we welcome your comments.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back to, brothers and sisters, like I said, as far as disaster, I leave that into the hands of the pros because I am in training as far as disaster just like you. I'm a financial planner. And I do know that when it comes to a disaster, the natural disasters, there's nothing at all we can do about those. But when it comes to our economical disasters, there's something that we should be doing about that. Brothers and sisters, as we speak, statistics came out today, and those stats are showing what the average middle-class families should be earning as far as today's cost of living. And their earnings have gone up. Today it's $85,000. That's what a household should be earning as far as saying I can live a moderate or a middle class life. The average white families brings in about $75,000 on an average. African Americans, the average income for an African American income is $45,000 or less a year. So how is it that you are not under a disaster at all times when your income is a disaster? Not a natural disaster, a financial disaster, which puts you homeless, puts you high crime, and just about anything else negative that you can think of that can happen to a people is happening to us. So, brothers and sisters, like I said, we made this country the richest country in the world. We did it as African Americans, black people. And today, statistics are showing that white folks, they're saying, should earn $85,000 a year. They're earning $75,000 on an average. But our income is $45,000 or below on an average for the African-American community. Now, like I said, we just went through a celebration again and got right back to it. Because, again, I'm trying to see something to celebrate for. I want to celebrate. I want to say what I saw on TV where they're singing hallelujah. I want to be able to say that. But, again, I'm not so much in the hallelujah when I am on the lowest end of the lowest end of survival in this country. Now, again, brothers and sisters, and some of this, you know, I could be making a lot of folks angry, but again, I have to call it the way I see it. I've been watching these celebrations, Black History Month. I've been down to the Cultural Museum that is built here in Washington, D.C., the African American Cultural Museum. Folks from all over the country come to it. We celebrate Juneteenth. We've celebrated all kinds of black so-called holidays. And but there's no economics. They can say, I'm going to give you Juneteenth. I'm going to give you a Black History Month. I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give you that. And how can I feel like I've been given something when, again, no economics come with it? our dollar bill is constantly going to do what we've always done, and that is to enrich the white society. And the white society makes certain of that by the way they appropriate their budgets, and make certain that when they appropriate these budgets, that African Americans are given less than nothing. Now, brothers and sisters, like I said, I watch the celebrations. I watch the history museums. I watch the history that is being told about us, telling us our historical picture, telling us all about us. And most of these stories that are being told are not being told by white folks. They're being told by black folks. And watching these explanations, or watch someone telling our story, and watching those who are telling our stories are other African Americans. And like I said, this is where our problem will piss a whole lot of folks off, and this is where I might not have a few folks on the radio next week. But I'm sorry. This ain't the first time I considered this, but yesterday it broke the camel's. This is what broke the camel's back. You know, brothers and sisters, when it comes to leadership in this country, when it comes to those who have exemplified leadership and have spoken up against injustice, wherever it may be in this country, the power in our country, in our communities, is our Christian brothers and sisters. They are the ones who really have the power. But I ask myself, what are they doing with their powers, and what have they ever done with their powers? And I go back to as far back as I can go, as far as history that I would say modern history of African Americans. So we're talking about 100 years from that, 100 years from today's date, and go back 100 years. That's more or less our history that we can say we're living, and many of us are still living because we've got plenty of citizens that are over 100 years old. But like I said, our Christian brothers and sisters are the ones who make up the power of our communities. But I also go back and I say, what in the world have we done as African Americans, because I remember I'm a Christian. I was born, I was raised a Christian. I've been a Muslim now for about close to 40 years, but I've been a Christian just about all my life. And I'm an African American. And our community, saying that to say, our communities is made up of Muslims and Christians. There's not a Christian family out here that don't have a Muslim somewhere in their families. A cousin, somebody in their family is a Muslim today. Saying that to say, when I watch someone speak for the American, African Americans, I never see anyone displaying anything about African Americans other than our Christian brothers and sisters. I watched yesterday, like I said, all the celebrations, but I've been down to the museum, and I've never heard anybody, a display, even at the museum. You go down, everything is displayed. Is displayed, and like I said, African Americans are doing this display. It is African Americans that are telling the story. These displays and the stories is all about what our Christian brothers and sisters are doing in this country. But when you start talking about going back to what those like Marcus Garvey, and Marcus Garvey and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, all of them formed a relationship with each other, and all of them started building economics in their communities. And in this case, we're talking about what they call the black Muslims. Going back to the early 30s, went the sacrifice they went through Jim Crow. But nevertheless, these black Muslims defied and spoke up against injustice during the time when our Christian brothers was afraid to look a white man in the eye. These black Muslims not only looked them in the eye, but these black Muslims made such an impression until certain anything wasn't imposed on them. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and during the time of his movement, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had businesses, African American businesses, all over this country, all over the country, from the east to the four west and everything in between. These black Muslims had businesses and was living an independent life, and when it came to respect, who respect a people's any more than those Muslims who demanded their respect? So, and I'm saying this to say, because I'm trying to make a comparison here, brothers and sisters, and like I said, you may not like it, but I like to see your comparison up against it. And I ask myself, when it comes to telling our story, when it comes to African Americans' freedoms, African Americans' representation, I haven't heard anyone say anything about or giving the credit to any of our Muslim brothers, and there are millions of us. It ain't like there's a few of us anymore. There are millions of us. I'm wondering why, when it comes to telling our stories, the churches and our Christian brothers and sisters forget about bringing in the African-American Muslims with them and telling the story. Because, again, when it comes to a contribution of economics, and there are many other contributions, but like I said, I'm a financial planner. I deal with business. when it comes to a contribution of economics, that Muslim can show you examples of their contribution, because they honor Elijah Muhammad, like I said, businesses all over the country. Not only that, our own newspapers, channels of communications. We had, and it still exists today, nothing changed, but I'm saying how long it go, how far it goes back. And it still is participating very strongly today. And that is, we had our own newspapers. We had our own businesses. We had our own communities. We demanded respect. As a matter of fact, the civil rights movement, we encouraged whatever power, and this I ain't talking about somebody slapping you upside the face and you're supposed to turn the other cheek and say we should overcome. No, we didn't do that. We was a little bit more direct than that, and because, and being that direct, it was the power as to where black folks was no longer afraid of being assertive to this so-called slave master, until it was the FBI, the government of this country. I never known them to fear Christians in the Christian communities. I never known them to fear these communities. But when it comes to Muslims, they said that we were the most dangerous peoples, this is the FBI, to the society. Why? Because we stood up. And we made a change. We bought carriage, the Black Panthers movement, all of the movements that exert power, and it all started with the FOI, the Fruit of Islam. That was a military, and a military that exists all over this country. I am saying this, brothers and sisters, and I'm saying this to my Christian brothers and sisters. So when you start talking about a Juneteenth, or you start talking about a celebration or honoring our African-American communities, why? Why is it that the power of our communities, which is our Christian brothers and sisters, but they never mention what African-American Muslims, the contribution that we have made, is never a part of the celebration and is of any kind of recognition in our communities? And I looked at that yesterday, and I'll be honest, and yes, I wasn't going to even bring this up, but sometimes you have to go ahead and because like I said, if I'm wrong, challenge me. But I ask you, what economical powers, what demands have our Christians and brothers ever given the government or any white folks in this country? What demands have they made? Because they're the ones who carry the power of our communities. But what have they ever demanded, and what contributions have they ever made towards the economical advancement or to the survival of our communities? Why is it that we continue to take, and why is it that I was talking about restitution earlier, why is it that you never heard our Christians and brothers ever demanding any kind of economic or monetary restitution? We asked for this, we asked for that, but I never heard them talking about we demand our share of the richness that we have made for this country. So again, I find that when it comes to the African American Muslims, it seems like we're forgotten until someone needs us. But after, and I could be wrong, that ain't never my opinion, but it looks like we're totally forgotten. I don't see us in the museums. I don't see Muslims telling the, standing beside our Christians and brothers, talking about the African-American story, even though we've been a huge part of it. And I didn't see it yesterday. As a matter of fact, and maybe somebody else did. I didn't see it. I was looking for it. So, and I started because I'm wondering, how do we come together as a community? And you see, I'm not one to ask for what is mine. And when it comes to restitution, again, I'll say it a million times, we made this country the richest country in the world. Where is our share? We're due that share. Mm-hmm. We don't have to ask for it, but the reason it won't come to us, our powers, our community powers won't demand it, and they won't stand up to demand it. We accept freedom without justice, and that's why we have freedom without justice, is because justice is something you have to sort of demand and take. I don't see that in our, and I'll say it again, I just don't see it in our Christian community, and I use the Christian because our Christian community is the power of the African-American community. And so in that case, when and how do we exert our powers? Brothers and sisters, our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Yeah, you said it in the last thing. We got to take what's ours. It ain't going to be given to us. Remember, the man had us looking at this movie called The Departed. I don't know if you saw that movie. It was called The Departed. It was about Whitey Bulger, the mobster in the Boston, right? But it wasn't about the movie. It was about the first thing he said in the movie. He said, "I ain't got nothing against my black chappies, but they got to understand, if you want something in this country, you got to take it. Ain't nobody going to give it to you."
Yeah.
That's what we got to do. We got to take what's ours, like we did before.
You have the right to take it because it belongs to you.
Absolutely.
We're still making it. Look at that. We're still making it because, like Brother Aziz was talking about the redlining, and I just mentioned the difference between the incomes of our society. Why is it that we take this? Why do we allow this? Why is it that someone can give you financial statistics that just came out today saying that the livable the decent way of livable income in this country is $85,000 a household. The white household is bringing in on an average of $75,000, but the black household on an average is bringing in $45,000 or less. And we live with that. No one is, and like I said, yesterday I heard them shouting and they was hollering hallelujah. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. But no justice to go with it. No justice.
Brother Lyle, you remember last week's show?
Our mics are open. We welcome your comments. Our mics are open. Go right ahead.
Yes, yes, this is Brother Isaac again. Last week on our show, we had a little discussion about Juneteenth. And I had made some observations, which I'd like to say that you recently made tonight. That's all I had to say. You know, just, I wasn't surprised at what was saying going on in our discussion. Yesterday, I tell you, I said, Bilal, you know, last week when I was discussing about how I felt about Juneteenth and 19th and the people in Texas and so forth and on. And yesterday when we talked, I say, well, what got you upset was, I say, the first thing was watching it. kind of had an idea what, you know, would be like just watching it, you know, as opposed to getting down to the fact of the condition of where our people are and dealing with those aspects. Not a bunch of hemming and hawing about a bunch of other stuff that wasn't really pertaining to the problem. That was just an event that took place in Texas, nowhere else. Everybody else in the country, 2 years prior, have been about going about their business, free. And the statistics that we were given on the progress that our people had made by Sister Aisha for 50 years after slavery was phenomenal. And that same progress has been withered down to very little or nothing today, as though it never happened. So, you know, that celebration, you know, need to be turned into somewhere we can get some value out of it, brother. Not to have a great portion of our people upset because it wasn't really about stuff that, you know, we critically need to be addressing. Well, that's my comment there on that.
Again, brothers and sisters, our mics are open. We got about 15 more minutes. We welcome your comments. We welcome your comments.
Yeah, brother.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, brother, come on. We said that he had heard that comment I made in the early first part of the show about this storm that took place down in Texas. He said he saw that. He saw that also about how the chickens survived that storm, like the building they were in blew away in that. And I would go to say that the birds, that building was much more stronger than those birds, if you know what I mean. But he made a good point when he said, if you notice that film, all the chickens are huddled together like it's one big white mass, like. And I guess that's how they survived it, because they were all together. They didn't, you know, run everywhere like their name is chicken, you know, scatter. They just huddle together. That unity, there's a lot of strength in that unity. See, so that was a good observation there. They survived that because of them huddling together and all unified to make, you know, one look like one big mass.
our mics are open. We welcome your comments. We welcome your comments. I'll tell you, we'll apply it this evening, but again, like I said, when it comes to a disaster, natural disasters, there's nothing we can do about controlling those. But we have a financial disaster. And so I'm at the question that is asked, what are we doing to control it? We know that the president of Ukraine could come over here. Gonna treat him just like royalty. And when he leaves. And in this case, they're getting ready to send him another one over a billion and some odd dollars on top of the many billions that has already been sent. I can't remember a time in our history for the last 400 or 500 years where we've been appropriated $1 billion or more, which is not very much money when it comes to what is due to us. Because when it comes to what is really due to us, that debt cannot be paid. It's too large. So, but that doesn't mean that we can't start paying on the debt. No, you may not, as far as paying the balance of the debt, chances are it's too large. But paying on that balance is something that can get started. But guess what? I haven't heard anybody ask. And like I said, the power of our communities is our Christian brothers and sisters. And I say that because I think the day that our Christian brothers and sisters wake up and start demanding freedom, justice, and equality, not ask for it, but demanding what is due to us, that's when you will see billions of dollars being appropriated to your communities. At least that's my opinion.
But and I have to agree with you, Brother Bilal, wholeheartedly.
But now go right ahead. Like I said, don't just say I'll mean it. This is not my talk show.
Yes. No, there are, and you're absolutely right. There are millions of dollars being appropriated from Congress through FEMA, and these millions of dollars are not touching our community. And the reason it's not touching our community is because we are not organized and coming together in unison to go after these resources. There's so much literature put out there daily. I can't even possibly keep up with all of it, from the federal agencies talking about the underserved population. And that's us now. That's how we are identified. And these other organizations are coming together to get those funds. Now, when FEMA released this past year that preparedness has increased only by 2% in America since 2013, when they put out that data, it said to me, I had to go and try to figure out what was the problem, because they were trying to put the money in, and they're putting the money into getting the information out there. But, however, preparedness is not increasing. And that's your first step to survival is preparedness, by the way. And it's not increasing because of the messaging. Messaging is not the message that is getting to our people. Also, our message, and we understood this from civil rights era, has to be a message of unification. First, the people have to be unified. Because I remember clearly when I was going into those public housing as an intern in community organization, the people were not organized, and our people are not organized now. We had to instill upon the people to become organized, and the way we did that successfully was to show them the harm. People don't do anything until they are hurting. And if they don't know they are hurting, we have to show them that they are hurting. Then that's when they realized, and that's how they came together in the civil rights era, which was very successful. When people came together, they were mobilized to demonstrate, to protest, go to the housing authority and request and demand that their apartment is brought up to date, the roaches are gotten rid of, and all of those things took place. But the messaging with all the money that Congress allocates to FEMA, it is not getting to our people because the messaging is wrong. And they're constantly putting it out every day. Weekly, almost weekly, I sit in these discussions with the federal agencies because we are part of the partnership. Well, the important thing for me is I know the messaging is wrong, and it's not getting to the people. I want to see if they're making a change. And these major universities are putting out the messaging, and the language is not addressing the people. It is not getting to where the people are and their needs. And so this is what we're striving to do through this radio show and through our efforts in training. And it requires us to come together. We need hundreds of our issues, and we have and thousands of our issues to go out and train people in the community. We are certified and qualified to train the trainers as well as training the people. We would like to train the trainers. We would like every state, every community to have a preparedness trainer on board in their community. That is what is going to be required for us to get through climate change and survive as a people. And so, but we are starting at a very low level, and that's the grassroots level. Until we can motivate the grassroots to listen, to take the time to listen, to come on board, we're not doing it. There are not a lot of people out there talking about preparedness, especially in our community. You go to these city and county board meetings, nobody's talking about it. But funds are being allocated to other things. So I say to the audience, come together with us. Work with us. Because you're going to need to go into your community and identify those sources that are somewhat organized to be trained. Bring people to get training. We can bring it to the community, and we know the messaging.
Yeah.
But what the federal agencies are putting out, the messaging is wrong because the people are not coming forth. And the people are not listening at all to it. The majority of the quote-unquote underserved population, and that's always us. We're always the underserved population in their eyes. But, however, they classify us with those names, but they don't serve us.
Okay.
So,
with that said, we're getting ready to go off the air, unfortunately.
Yeah, okay. So work with us, community. Come on board with us.
By all means. And with that said, brothers and sisters, thanks for joining us, and we look forward to having a lively discussion next Wednesday at the same time. Good evening.
Buffalo soldier, fighting an arrival.